Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Frog Watch with your one and only host who is the most.
And the name of that one was Through the Tunnel by Trevor Rabin from his album Jacaranda in 2012. After a lot of years in which he was a big-time Hollywood soundtrack guy, this was a nice return for Trevor, back to more conventional music. I always thought this was a great, sophisticated album, and I can highly recommend it. And next up, I've got the Prog Radar Weekly Recommendation and Bite-Size Review, in conjunction with my friend Martin Hutchinson over in the UK, who runs Prog Radar, the Facebook page, and Prog Radar and Friends Reviewers, I believe is the name of the... Is that what it is? Prog Radar and Friends? Something like that. Is another Facebook page. And progradar.org, anyway, is the website proper. And this week, Martin has sent us a track from a band called The Winter Tree, which was formerly known as Magus. This album is entitled The Earth Below, and the name of the song that we're going to feature is A Thousand Futures.
Up above, a light is shining in the northern sky. Planets and the constellations slowly passing by. Through the ages I slowed up, just like yours and mine, dreaming of a thousand futures, looking for a sign. Light is shining in the summer sky. It's not a planet or a star that quickly flies on by. Through the ages, faith and fear are watching from afar. From thank you.
Once again, the name of the song was A Thousand Futures by The Winter Tree, formerly known as Magus. Their album, The Earth Below. As an interesting little side note, an artist that we've featured here several times, Jakob Holm Lupo, who was the founder and main creative force behind White Willow and the Opium Cartel, was involved in the production and mixing of this album. But I'm going to go ahead now and give you Martin's bite-sized review. Once again, this is for the album The Earth Below by The Winter Tree. Formerly Magus, this Vermont band were formed back in 1987 by Andrew Latray, and their latest release is another beautiful collection of ethereal songs that focus on his amazing voice. A wonderful listening experience that is good for the heart and soul. Standout track is A Thousand Futures. And that, by the way, was the one that we did play. Anyway, once again, if you're interested in new prog releases, go over to check out progradar.org or the Prog Radar Facebook page, or Prog Radar Friends and Reviewers, I believe is the proper title of the other page they run, where various other guests also provide reviews. There's just so much music being reviewed and so many intelligent reviewers working over there that are really, you know, they can help you sort through some of the stuff and maybe decide on, you know, what you want to spend your hard-earned shekels on there. Next up, I'd like to play a track from arguably one of the best keyboard players to ever grace the rock and roll genre. Of course, I'm talking about Rick Wakeman, former keyboardist for Yes. From his album Retro in 2006, I'd like to play a song called Homage to the Doctor.
Thank you. before us. Homage to the doctor, always standing near me, always making music.
Once again, that was Homage to the Doctor from Rick Wakeman's Retro album in 2006. This is a nice tribute to the synth pioneer Bob Moog. Some brilliant work from Rick, and this track also features his daughter Gemma and his longtime collaborator Ashley Holt, finishing off the track with some great vocals. Moving right along, I'd like to play a track from a brand new release by a band that I was very excited to hear, Mantra Vega. This is the joint venture between Dave Kirshner and Heather Finley, the former vocalist with Mostly Autumn. So from their album, The Illusion's Reckoning, which was just released like a week or two ago, I'd like to play a song called Island. Again, this is Mantra Vega, brand new.
Just behind the darkness, there's a shimmering of light, and I find where the shadows fall, shifts the labyrinth of we
And once again, the name of that track was Island, the name of the album, The Illusion's Reckoning, and the name of the band, Mantra Vega. And I'm going to let a little secret out from under my hat. Actually, I've been telling all kinds of people about this because I'm so excited about it. But anyway, I've been in talks with Dave Kirzner, and he is going to be appearing as a guest on this show within the next few weeks. So I'm incredibly excited about that, and I think it should be a lot of fun to have Dave on. We could talk about all kinds of things. He's such an interesting guy, and he's just all over the place right now. I'm really having a blast, it looks like. He just seems like he's having the time of his life. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to talk to him. So anyway, look for that coming up very soon, within a few weeks here on Prog Watch. By the way, Dave was also mentioning that he might be providing a little sneak peek into his new live album for the Dave Kirzner Band, which he's working on at the moment. So we may have a little exclusive here on Prog Watch, so definitely watch for that. And next up, I'd like to play a band that combined the talents of two masters, in my opinion, of their craft. I saw them recently in Pittsburgh, PA, here in my hometown, in a very small, intimate theater, and it was really a fantastic show. I'm talking about the Anderson Pawnee Band, which combined the talents of John Anderson of Yes, of course, and Jean-Luc Pawnee, the great jazz violinist, jazz fusion, I should say, because he played with Zappa and all kinds of guys, Stanley Clarke and Al Di Meola. But anyway, from their album, Better Late Than Never, released in 2015, which alludes to the fact that they had talked about getting together about 30 years ago. And so Better Late Than Never, they actually did it. But anyway, the name of the track, New New World. Once again, it's the Anderson Pawnee Band.
Traveling that creation, traveling that truth.
Sure, the astute listeners out there realize what I did there. I played something from Trevor Rabin, I played something from Rick Wakeman, and I played something from John Anderson. And for those of you who have had an ear to the Prague rumor mill, you may have heard that those three guys are getting together for a project and should be recording and touring later this year. I, for one, am very excited and looking forward to that. I'm sure it will be interesting and probably divisive.
This is Voyage 35 Radio. Enjoy the music.
So you may have noticed I've been cruising right along here, and that's because I wanted to save some time for the main feature here, which is an interview with Darren Charles, who is the main creative force behind the band Godsticks. This is a band out of Wales in the United Kingdom. They play a brand of very interesting heavy-type prog, which I've kind of almost described as progressive grunge. I mean, it's really interesting. I find all kinds of different elements going on, and they have very interesting melodies and harmonies and hooks and stuff. But anyway, the rest of the band is Steve Roberts on drums and keyboards, Dan Nelson on bass, and as I mentioned, Darren Charles, he plays guitars, he's the main vocalist, and he also plays some keyboards. So recently I caught up with Darren via Skype interview, and I'm going to go ahead and play some of that right now. So my guest today is Darren Charles of Godsticks. How are you doing, Darren?
Great. How are you doing, Tony?
I'm doing okay. I guess we were going to ask Darren some questions about various things related to his project Godsticks, a great band I just discovered a little while back. I really like what you guys are doing. Just three guys, huh?
Just three. Well, it's four at the moment. It was three guys on the record. Shortly after we finished recording the album, we realized that we'd need, more than three people to perform that live.
So what'd you add?
We added another guitarist. We used to have a keyboard player, Murray, who played with us live. But as you probably hear on this record, there are keyboards throughout the record, but they're sort of in the background, and there's a lot of guitar parts going on, so I had to bite the bullet. I'm not a big fan of working with the guitar players, if I'm honest, just because I'm a guitar player and I don't really like working with myself.
So. I played with a guy who was like that also. Great guitar player and didn't really like playing with other guitar players.
I think we're all as bad as one another. They all have a tendency, and I very much include myself in it, is that we just show up to practice, just whittle, as everybody else, and just play with their amp. But to be fair, the guy that we found is nothing like me. And in fact, he does whittle a bit, but he's, when I say whittle, I suppose that maybe that's an English term, just playing constantly, licks, et cetera, while everyone else is setting up. I actually really enjoy working with him. So it was a good find, really.
Cool. So, I had intended to ask you how you played some of that stuff live, because there are some pretty neat keyboard things on. I have the two albums, the last two albums that you made, Emergence, and what was the one before that was
Envisaged Conundrum.
The Envisaged Conundrum, yeah. And I did really like some of the stuff that did have some keyboards, and I was curious how the three-man band would do that, because I see like your drummer gets a little credit for playing keyboards, and you get some keyboard credit on the albums.
Yeah, well, the majority of the songs that feature keyboards prominently are usually ones that were written on keyboards. There was a time when we used to play material off those albums as a three-piece with me on keyboards and guitar and vocals. And we used to use some backing tracks, but that was a while back, and we didn't really enjoy playing with backing tracks because it just felt a little bit rigid and a little bit disingenuous as well. Even though, you know, a lot of bands use backing tracks these days.
Yeah, I
felt that we used them, like I said, a little bit too disingenuously. You know, when there's a guitar part going or a keyboard part going, yet there's no one on stage playing a guitar or a keyboard at that time. I just think that we took it a bit too far. So it was before we released this last album, we had a keyboard player who came out with us to perform, you know, tracks off the Envisaged Conundrum and Spiral Vendetta, and that made playing live far more enjoyable. It was just playing off one another, not playing to a click track. We always had to play to a click track when there was backing tracks. And
sure.
I don't know. Sometimes it was fun, but a lot of times it wasn't. And I can't remember, it was at this specific gig, and I swore that, or we all swore at the time, that we'd never play the backing tracks ever again. But so now I suppose that's on the record, so I don't think we've got any choice but never to play with them again.
Yeah.
But the keyboard parts, we've done a few live shows since the release in Emergence, and we haven't played anything from anything before Emergence. I haven't played anything from Envisaged Conundrum or Spiral Vendetta, so we haven't missed the keyboards. But if we were doing, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hour set, then we'd have to consider getting keyboards in again, really. But at the moment, we're not, because we're not headlining anyway, we're not really missing it at the moment.
Okay. So I guess, you know, I had a few questions that I pre-planned. I guess we were hitting on them a little bit. So how do you usually write your material? You do whittling, or I'll use your term, huh? Or you know, if you have an idea in your head, or do you hear riffs, or, you know, how do you come up with stuff?
Well, it's very rarely does it come by jamming in the rehearsal. In fact, I don't think we've ever written anything from jamming in a rehearsal room, just because I never really felt comfortable jamming things through, because a lot of the times when you're jamming, you sort of tend to rely on things you can already play, you know, and draw on the same old tired licks and riffs that you already know. You very rarely come up with anything new. In my experience, it's certainly not the case for most other people, but when I'm sat there jamming, there's just a pressure to perform, and therefore you just sort of draw in on things you already know. So, but it's drums that generally give me the inspiration. So a lot of the times I'll come up with a riff that, it depends what mood I'm in, really. I always find that I'm most inspired when I least want to be, when I've got something to do, when I'm busy, you know, when I'm sort of rehearsing or something, you know, practicing, you know, because I very often, well, I still have to practice the singing and the playing because it's so tricky. So a lot of the times the inspiration comes when I least want it. And it's just, it could be through playing, you know, through a track, you know, one of the rehearsing a track from, you know, the album, and I could get a riff idea and then I'll record it on my iPhone. And then usually I take it into rehearsal and get someone to play a drum beat. So I take a laptop in. I would have recorded this riff to a click, and then I'll just get, it used to be Steve when Steve was in the band, I'd stick a set of earphones on him and say, listen to this, and just keep jamming over it to get a good beat. And then I'd take the beat home and then just completely disregard that riff, whatever it was based on, and usually come up with something new. So, and then it's just a case of, it's a strange process, to be honest. I don't expect anyone to relate to the process I use to come up with ideas, but I usually just chop and change drum parts. So like Steve might have, or whoever I rehearsed with, might have come up with sort of a drum beat for a riff that I might have wrote in 7/4 or something like that. And I end up just chopping things up to fit things I'm now improvising new over this drum beat. So
that's interesting,
So it's a strange way, and it's a very time-consuming way of writing, but I don't really feel comfortable. I've never really enjoyed playing to a drum machine or anything MIDI. I don't get any inspiration from that. It could be a great MIDI beat, but it's just, I don't know, I just like the acoustic nature of a drum kit rather than the, and I like the dynamics, and I like...
I notice you have a lot of syncopation at times, you know, where the drums are really like emphasizing, you know, the guitar part, and, you know, he's like smashing cymbals and cutting them off and stuff. I mean, that was some neat stuff, and you can't get that if you're just playing to a beat.
It's weird. It's a lot of the things, a lot of the beats that the feature on those albums are a result of my taking a beat home that Steve has recorded, and then just chopping it up. So I might take a bass drum out of there, I might add a bass drum, I might chop off a beat, and just create something new and something he'd never actually played. And then bring, once I've chopped and edited all these drum parts that fit the idea that I've come up with, I then take, it could be like maybe 50% of the finished track, I'll bring it in and say, okay, this is the beat that I've just created using some of your ideas, replay this. So then I'll take the actual, I'll make him replay something he's never played. So a lot of the times it's really difficult for the drummer because he's never actually played what I'm bringing in. And sometimes it's not really, and he never would have played it because it might, as you mentioned, certain things are just like little hi-hats that have been chalked or cymbals that have been chalked that is actually, is technically really difficult to do because he never actually played it and you wouldn't do it naturally. But those things are actually the foundations of whatever I've put on top of that beat. So it's vital that that we reproduce these weird drum parts that I'm taking back in. Although, you know, I'm saying that they're not, certainly on this album, they're not as weird and as they were on previous releases, I think.
That's a very interesting approach. Well, I wanted to break up the interview somewhat with some music, of course. So at this point, I'm going to take a break, and I'm going to play one from the last album by Godstix. The name of the album was The Envisaged Conundrum. It was released in 2013. And I don't know if Darren will appreciate me playing this one because he seems to be a little more enamored of the music on the latest release, but I really enjoyed this track from their last album. This is one of the songs that I heard first, and it really grabbed me and said, these guys are something different. Anyway, the name of the song is In a Way That Ended Me, and once again, it's Godstix from their album The Envisaged Conundrum.
Thank you.
So that was called In a Way That Ended Me Once Again, and it was from the Envisage Conundrum by Godsticks, released in 2013.
Voyage 35 Prague Radio.
I'm going to continue on with the interview.
So care to talk at all about your gear, like what kind of equipment you use, what you record on, that kind of stuff?
This album was used for entirely a digital processor called the AxeFX, something I bought a couple of years ago, and it's probably the best piece of equipment I've ever bought in, Christ, 20-odd years that I've been playing. I've used sort of digital modeling before previously, like Line 6 and things like that, and they've always been useful for recording, but this Axe, it gives you, we're talking like about 150 different amps. And whilst that, wow, even though I'm only using, you know, one or two, maybe three or four for this, it was really inspirational just being able to have the sound, being able to recreate the sound in your head, because you've got so many different amps available to you. You know, if I was just like previously, I've used just one amp, and I'd always only be able to get sort of approximately close to the sound that I was hearing, whereas I spent a lot of time along with the producer with this AxeFX getting exactly the type of sound that I wanted. I never thought that I'd end up recording an entire album just using a digital effects processor, but I don't think I could ever do it any other way, because it's the most difficult part of recording guitar is miking up cabs, because you never actually, sticking a mic in front of that cab right on the top of the speaker is never actually the sound you hear really in a rehearsal space. It's always, no one ever just sticks their ear right next to the cabinet. So
right.
Just not very inspirational. It's just miking up a cab. And given that this is sort of a digital representation of a cab.
So live, you're just, you're going to use these sounds and just play like through a clean amplifier just to make it loud?
Well, no, I don't really like using digital modeling things live, because I don't see the point, if I'm honest. I can't actually see the point. If we were playing to, you know, 1,000, 2,000 people regularly, that's something I would consider, because again, most of the sound is coming out of the PA. So again, that's just the sound of a mic'd up cab again, and it's not necessarily representative of the sound that you want. But we're not playing to 1,000, 2,000 people, so I still like to hear the sort of air coming out of the back of the cabinet. So I still prefer to use a tube amp and 4x12. So I've got a Marshall at the moment. I'm using a Marshall 4x12 and a Marshall 410 head. And I really enjoy playing that, if I'm honest. That, I do get inspiration just from, you know, I got a rehearsal space where I just practice through the songs, but I'm always playing through an amp. But when it comes to recording, it's digital all the way for me. But live, I like to hear the air coming from the cab, to be honest. So I'm sort of quite traditional in that way.
Okay. You mentioned playing live. How much do you play? Do you get to play as much as you'd like?
No. Simple as
yeah,
that.
Who does, right?
We had a tour planned just about 2 months after we finished the album with a guy called Tony McAlpine, the guitarist and composer. But unfortunately, and it was a European tour. It was like a 10-day European tour over Italy, Spain. But unfortunately for Tony, he developed cancer during the time. So he had to cancel that tour. He had to cancel his Asia tour as well. So he's in recovery at the moment. But
well, that's good. We wish him well.
Yeah. It sort of puts things into perspective by me saying, oh, that was a spanner in the works for Godsticks. But it sort of, that was the least of our concerns given that grave news. But so it meant just we haven't played as much as we wanted to. We've done some gigs. We just supported the Aristocrats, band that features Guthrie Govan and Brian Bell and Marco Miniman. We did a couple of shows with them earlier this month. And we've got a couple of local shows coming up next month and February as well. And there's a possibility, I can't talk about it at the moment, but there might be a tour coming up in mid-February and then something later on in 2016 as well. there's a definite urge to play live. It feels like, for me, there's a cycle. There's you know, writing, recording, and then playing live. And at the moment, that we haven't, as far as I'm concerned, we haven't really played live as much. We've done about 5 shows, and I really do miss it. I really, that's the biggest disappointment at the moment, is that we haven't got enough live shows to perform this material, because the 4 or 5 that we've done, I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Yeah. Do you still get tight at all when you play? You get any butterflies or?
No, not anymore. It's quite strange, really. It's sort of matter of fact in a way. Even like, I used to find that, you know, I've done Christ, I've done God knows how many gigs now, but I always found that when I had a break, even whether it was 6 months and then playing the first show, I always found that there was a lot of tension, at least. Not necessarily butterflies, just tension, which is the enemy of any musician, really. But I don't seem to get it anymore, because I'm really looking forward to it more than anything else. I'm really looking forward to playing live and getting an opportunity to play this, especially the music from this album, because it's not just because we haven't got a keyboard player that we're not playing anything from previous albums. I really enjoy all the music from this album. I suppose most bands say that they want to play their new material, but I'm now one of them.
Yeah, the latest album's always your favorite, right?
I know, and I resent saying it, because there's nothing that I dislike more when I'm reading interviews with bands and saying, oh, this is, we feel that this, when bands say, oh, we feel this is the best material we've ever done, blah, blah. And I think, well, I wouldn't just disregard albums that I really love just by saying that. And now I find myself saying exactly the same thing.
Yeah, but it's natural. I mean, you're going to feel, you know, I mean, you just labored on it for months or whatever, you know, and it's fresh. It's new to you. You obviously think it's good, or you wouldn't be putting it out. So, you know, you're talking about writing and stuff. Do you remember some of the stuff you wrote when you were really young? When did you start writing material, actually? When did you start playing?
I think I started going back a few years now. I think I might have started playing guitar when I was about 11 or something like that, maybe 10 or 11. And I think I wrote my first track when I bought a 4-track recorder. I remember borrowing the money off my uncle when I was about, I think it was 17, maybe 17 or 18. And I'd always wanted to start recording, you know, so I borrowed the money to buy this Fostex 4-track recorder.
I had one.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, Fostex, yep.
Then were the days.
Yeah, they were, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you imagine recording like that now with just a cassette and just those 4 tracks in front
right.
of you? And
I used to try to get like 10 tracks on there, and, you know, by that time the drums were just all hidden in a wash of hiss. And, you know.
Yeah. That's exactly the same experience, and then you ended up having to bounce tracks to work 1 track.
Right, right, yeah. You ended up with 4 or 5 things on the first.
These days, Tony, these kids don't understand what.
Oh yeah, well, I love it though. I have a computer set up, and I, you know, it's amazing to me what you can do on a decent PC these days. It's unbelievable.
That's incredible, and I think that's why there's so many bands out there. Really, is just because we've all got access to this technology now. Whereas, you know, back when I bought that 4-track, there was that. That was the thing. That was the only thing you could do, and that was you know, that was really expensive. I remember
it was pretty expensive,
like $600, which is like what, about $1,000, something like that.
Yeah, when they first came out, yeah.
I bought one of those, and just the moment I learned how to use it, I recorded something immediately. It was this instrumental track. I even know what, I even got a melody in my head now. I still remember it. I never did anything with it. It was just. I was able to recreate a rhythm track, did a little clean rhythm track, and then did this little sort of melody over it. I thought, you know, I've written something already. And then I just carried on doing it. I used to have, one of those little Sony recorders as well, just a tape deck. I used to record ideas on. Sure. Used to have one of them. It was just one single cassette. It was like a carry, sort of carry recorder it was, basically. So I'd carry one of those around me. I'd come up with an idea, record it on there. Now we got iPhones.
Right, right.
But yeah, I just spent, it was from that point onwards, really, I was writing. And then when I got my first sequencer software then, when I was about 19, 20 or something like that, 19, Cakewalk it was at the time.
Right.
And then I started learning to read music. I started getting into Frank Zappa and things and transcribing stuff and just learning how to, because I sort of knew how to read music before, but I never really got into it. But then I started just studying music theory and studying, and then I used to just use the sequencer software to create. So I stopped using the guitar at that time, and I was just scoring my ideas, just using the staff in the MIDI in the staff view in this cakewalk package. So I was just using, just building these opuses, really, of just trombones, drums, everything, any instrument you could think of, really. I was just writing music. That's how I wrote my music for years, really, without guitar, believe it or not.
Well, it is hard to believe that, you know, in light of your material, it's just so guitar oriented, a lot of it.
And just to break things up again, I decided to take a little pause here in the interview. I'm going to play a track from Godstick's latest album, Emergence, which was just released last year. The name of this song is 1%. That was 1% by God Sticks from their album Emergence, released in 2015. I'm going to finish up the interview.
Do you use drop tuning at all? Are you into that?
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. And it results in, like, at the moment, when we did those two shows with the Aristocrats recently, it was a 45-minute opening set, and we had 7 guitars on stage between me and Gavin. And that's as a result of having so many different tunings.
Yeah.
And it's just, it looks extremely pretentious. You know, you've got as many guitars as you've got songs in the set. You know, I find that, I think on the last album I discovered, I don't know how I discovered it, but open D minor tuning. I wrote a song with that. So it's a couple in drop D. Then for this album, the first track on the album, Below the Belt, that's in open C major tuning, which I discovered via Devin Townsend. And that's a great tuning as well.
Cool, yeah. I find they're inspirational sometimes just because it's so different. You get outside of your box and you just start, you don't even know sometimes what notes you're playing, but you just start playing something that sounds good, you know?
That's exactly what I was trying to say earlier on, is when we, you know, when we talk about jamming, which is why I don't like jamming, because we tend to fall on all the obvious shits. But when you're playing with something, I purposely have no idea what notes I'm hitting on that C major tuning or the D minor tuning. You're just using your ears, because you've got no choice but to use your ears to guide you to wherever you're going next. And that's quite inspirational, as you've experienced.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why I like sort of, but the problem is you can start getting used to these tunings then, and then you start drawing on the same old crap that you're coming out with all the time. But I do find that's one of the best ways to get out of a rut, is pick something up in a different tuning. And I even had an 8-string. Gavin's been using an 8-string live, and I've even started writing stuff on an 8-string recently as well. But I don't think I've got a gruff enough voice to provide the death metal vocals required for that kind of tuning yet. But it's really interesting. These are all things. But I use a 7-string. I mean, that was the other thing that was an inspiration for this album, is that I bought a 7-string about a year and a half, 2 years ago, just for the hell of it, because I seen one sort of cheap. So I'll have a go at that. You know, because I always, again, it's always something, I just wanted something new, somewhere new to go on it. So, and it ended up like at least half of this album, maybe probably more, was written and performed using a 7-string.
Cool.
And then there's, but it's, I always find it inspirational trying different tunings, but it certainly clutters up the stage.
Yeah. So, yeah, I hear a lot of different things going on in your sound. Do you care to talk at all about any of your influences, or, how about your band name too? You care to talk about that?
Well, the band name's really boring. My wife came up with a band name because we were just basically. Do you remember we were looking for a Google Whack? I don't know if you remember what a Google Whack was. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
Where you type in a word and it only yield one result in Google. That doesn't happen anymore.
Oh yeah, I imagine that.
In the early days. So he's looking for, basically, I was looking for something original, because coming up with a band name, as you can imagine, is really difficult.
Oh yeah, I hate it. I hate it.
I know, and I don't really like the band name, to be honest. I don't like it, and I don't think I've liked it from the beginning. I probably liked it at one stage, but I don't like it anymore. But to be honest with you, a band name is why you make it, because you can, you know, think of all the, you know, I think Rush is a crap name, you know, Prefab Sprout. You know, there's a band called Prefab Sprout.
Right.
You know, Pink Floyd. They're all ridiculous names when you think about it, but it's why you make it. You know, it becomes irrelevant in the end. So, yeah, the boring answer is that my wife found it, and I had no idea what it was. And I think they're Maori implements of worship. So she did the research of what they actually are. There is such a thing as God Sticks. It's nothing to do with drums, unfortunately. But yeah, as for influences, they really changed over the years, and you could probably listening to like the last three albums we did, you could probably identify who I was listening to at the time. You know, I remember when we did Spiral Dan Vendetta, I was heavily into, you know, Zappa, Steely Dan even at that time, because I always used to find what they did harmonically really interesting. In fact, I was at a massive Steely Dan phase. I went through everything. I used to transcribe loads of the stuff, learning on piano, learning on guitar. So they were an influence. Zappa was just changed my life when I discovered him when I was about 19. And I think he'll always remain an influence, really, just in that he had his own rule book. You know, I remember when I first listened to, I think Them or Us was the first album I had. And I only bought it because Steve Vai was on it. That was the only reason I bought this album, because I basically collecting everything that Steve Vai played on at the time I was younger. So after I listened to Stevie Spankin', which is the song that Steve Vai played on, I remember that was it. So I didn't listen to the album until I always remembered when I was about, I don't know, 17 or 18, taking the dog out for a walk and just thought, oh, I'll take this up, just listening to it in my Walkman. I remember just thinking, I've never heard anything like this. You know, I've never heard any music like this before. It doesn't make any sense in a weird way. It's just no frame of reference.
Yeah.
It's completely unique. You know, Baby Take Your Teeth Out and things like that. You know, it sort of changed my life. And that from that moment, I started buying, I went out by, bought Shoot Your Booty. And I'm thinking, this is, and that was it. You know, it changed my whole outlook on music, just thinking that there are no rules. He set the bar for me in lots of different ways. And that's why I said I started, that's when I was influenced to write stuff just on manuscript paper and things like that, and just compose rather than just use a guitar to write riffs and things like that. But that was a big influence for a while. And then the last album, Rufus Wainwright was another, probably my second biggest influence after Zappa, after a while. I really love his music as well. I think I watched him 3 times in a year when he came over here, and it was just an incredible experience just to listen to his voice.
Nothing 90s. I think I hear, I don't know, some of your music almost sounds like progressive grunge to me sometimes. I hope you're not offended by that. There's something in the vocal harmonies and, you know, the riffs, and it's heavy and syncopated, and I mean, it's like, I can almost imagine what some of those bands, you know, if they had continued on and progressed, like progressive, you know, that maybe it would have ended up sounding like Godsticks, you know?
Well, I do take it as a compliment, really, the grunge reference, because, you know, some of the reviews have been comparing us to, like, Alice in Chains and Stone Temple Pilots and things like that. And in all honesty, a lot of the times when I've read some reviews of previous albums, I've never even heard of these bands. I've heard of Stone Temple Pilots, but I never actually heard any of their music. And it was the same with Alice in Chains. I heard a bit of when I was younger. My friend was into it, but I've since gone out and bought the albums, like listening to Dirt and Alice in Chains, is a fantastic album.
Yeah.
Stone Temple Pilots, I can't get into it. I've bought, like, I think it's because I made a mistake in buying. Like, they had an offer on a box set, which is 5 albums, and then it just becomes a little bit overwhelming. Then you can't. But when I just put one in the car a few weeks ago and just kept it in the car, I thought, I really enjoyed this. This is quite good. And I can see why there's some comparison, especially with the guitar sound. There is a certain heaviness to it. So usually, no, like, and Rush is all we always get compared to as well. I'm not a fan of Rush at all, really. Our previous drummer was heavily into Rush, so maybe that's why we get that comparison. But no, I do take it. I like lots of different types of music. So if people mention different types of music like grunge and progressive rock and metal and things like that, then that's great, because I really like all those types of music.
Very cool. Well, that was about all I had. You know, I want to thank you very much for doing it. And like I said, it's been fun talking to you and getting.
No, I appreciate the support, Tony, and I mean that sincerely.
No, I really like, you know, I'm obviously into progressive rock. I'm on all these stations, but I definitely went through a phase in the 90s where I was in kind of a grunge band, and you know, we did okay. We nowhere near what you're doing, probably, but, you know, around town, we played a few gigs, we had a few good reviews, made a record that sounded pretty good for the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so I can appreciate that stuff also. And I, you know, I just, I really found your sound to be really kind of an interesting amalgamation of a lot of different stuff that it's different than anything else, really, you know?
No, I appreciate that. That's great feedback, to be honest. And I do like the references to, I do like the grunge references, because there was, talking about influences, Soundgarden were a definite influence on me growing up. And I remember first discovering them. Do you remember Headbangers Ball on MTV?
Yeah. Yep.
I remember discovering them, and that was another big sort of, I wouldn't say life changing episode musically, but I remember buying Louder Than Love and being that album's a definite inspiration. So the grunge scene, even though a lot of the bands I hadn't listened to, it was important to have happened, I think, grunge, because the way 80s guitar metal was
the whole hair metal
it was
thing,
one of the most important things that could have happened.
Yeah, kind of a reset button, kind of. Got back to some more rock and roll kind of stuff, and yeah, just a little more from the balls again, I guess, you know, instead of from the puffed up hair.
It was a crazy time.
Yeah, it was. So that was a lot of fun talking to Darren there. I hope you got into his head a little bit and could see where he's coming from. I had a great time chatting with him, and I'd love to have him on again sometime. And I wish him all the best with the band. And now, you know, I wanted to leave you with one more God Sticks before we wrap up. In the name of this song, this is one that is one of Darren's favorites from their album Emergence, and it's called Below the Belt.
Either way, not until the beams are swam.
And as its name implies, that one does kind of get you right there, huh? Below the Belt. Great track from Godsticks. Once again, thanks, Darren Charles. So that is about all we have time for this week. Do you want to sing us out, Captain Quint?
Farewell and adieu to you fair Spanish ladies. Farewell and adieu, you ladies of Spain. For we've received orders for to sail back to Boston. And so nevermore shall we see you again.
And as always, if you like the show, please go and like the Facebook page, Prog-Watch on Facebook. Or you can follow me on Twitter, at ProgSquatch. ProgSquatch is all one word. Put out the daily classic over there. And you can always email me if you want to get into a little dialogue here. Give me some comments on the show, suggestions, whatever. ProgSquatch, all one word, at gmail.com. And like I said earlier, I'm trying to take the show in the direction here where I'm trying to, you know, get more interviews with people, let you hear from the people who are making the music when possible. You know, I don't want to do it every week, but I wouldn't mind throwing it in there every other week or every third week. So, you know, we've been getting some interesting guests lately. And don't forget to watch out for Dave Kirshner coming down the pike. I'm also possibly going to be featuring Mark McCrite of Rocket Scientists. So the Prog Squatch is hard at work here trying to bring you a great show every week. And yeah, so you know, if you want to, please go show me a little love on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. Or send me a nice email saying, hey, Prog Squatch, I like it. Oh, whatever. I'm begging and shilling at this point. So I will just say to you, prog on, brothers and sisters.
Amazing at tracking down hard-to-find items. Library books, socks, you name it. But sometimes help is welcomed. Care.com makes it easy to find babysitters near you. Sitters with the experience and skills your family needs, like after-school pickup and homework help. You just post a job for qualified sitters to apply. And since all Care.com caregivers are background-checked, you can feel confident about interviewing and hiring. To get the child care help you need, sign up now at Care.com.